Intro. I. Introductory. N. Nice. T. Tolerable. R. Ramifications. O. Oh, I see. Uh-oh. This was the Smartless Intro!
Welcome to Smartless.
Smart.
Well, when did you start chasing acting?
Great question. Settle in.
A couple of weeks ago, I think.
No, yeah. I got a long answer. I'm going to give you the long. It's going to be long.
Any kid stuff?
Excuse me.
Why is that an excuse me? Any kid stuff?
I auditioned for a couple things when I was like 16. I did a couple commercials.
Okay.
A tight answer would be great.
Yeah, just a tighter.
We've got a guest to get to.
Okay, yeah, sorry. My answer is
you're
sure.
Not the guest.
Have you seen the show?
I
think it's on Netflix. It's like, it's the new version of how they made these movies. And they just did Aliens. They did like Home Alone. Oh, wow. They did all, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I've heard of this. But yeah. I don't have the time to watch stuff like that. So you have a lot of expendable time.
I really enjoy that because I'm a big fan of these movies. And they get the cast. They got Sigourney Weaver to chat. And it's really cool about how they made those movies.
You know what my feeling on that is? There's a lot of behind the scenes and how they made it. It's all like how they made the sausage. Hey, guess what? Just enjoy the sausage.
No, I enjoy how they make the sausage.
If I had a dollar.
I know.
Listen. Without further ado, let's do.
Wait, are we in store for one of Jason's classic profiles?
No, it's not.
Here we go.
It's
you wrote this in between shows.
It's not that great. It's not that great. Because the other ones have been, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about my intro guest, not you. You're going to be incredible. I will give you a quick hint, though. Yeah. You know, talking about how you're not wearing a hat today, Sean.
And yeah.
I love seeing your head. I think you've got a great head.
Don't say he wears a lot of hats.
He does. And I wish that he wouldn't. He's got a beautiful head on him. You'll see right now. Here we go. Okay. So today we have a fella that has found himself intentionally or not as a health analyst and part-time fixer for all that ails us here in our beloved country.
Oh, I love it. I love it already.
Some may call him a savior. Others may say the opposite. But no matter which side you stand on national policies, you cannot deny that this guy puts the time in on saying what he believes and the consistency of acting on it, leaving us all with a mountain of information that we might not otherwise have the time to research even initially be interested in knowing. So thank you right up front, sir. He's a one-time Eagle Scout and has since gone on to win an Oscar, a Palme d'Or, and been named one of Time's 100 most influential, and has now made it to Smartless. Congratulations. What? Mr. Michael Moore.
I knew it was Michael Moore.
Wow.
Michael Moore.
Look at that beautiful hair.
You can have the hat there,
I mean,
Sean.
Come on.
Oh, he does have a hat on, yeah.
You're wearing a Warriors hat, Michael?
Yeah.
Wow.
He loves him.
Draymond Green, Michigan State.
Uh-huh. You followed him all the way there.
Michael, I was just in Michigan yesterday.
Well, you were.
Great story, Sean.
Yeah, thanks.
What were you doing there?
A friend of mine lives in Lakeside, Michigan.
Who was it? Jason, do you know which friend of Sean's lives in
Lakeside? I was. Dimitri is her name.
Raina. It's Raina.
That's it. I knew I was close.
Well, you know, this is... I'm a big fan of this podcast and I listen to it.
No.
Yes.
I never heard it.
I'm your third Michigander. On Smartless as your guest. Jeff Daniels.
Yeah,
right.
On. And Ken Burns from Ann Arbor.
Wow, is that where he started?
Yes.
No way.
So there's a Michigan thing going on here with Smartless, it seems.
Well, we're fond of Michigan. I've got a long history with Michigan. I grew up in Ontario. I'm Michigan adjacent.
I was just going to say, said the Canadian, yes.
Yeah, I'm Michigan adjacent.
You know, we used to go, the big foreign vacation for us was to go to a Leafs game, Maple Leafs game, in the old garden there. And there was a really cheap hotel right next to the old garden. And we'd all, we'd get a room, a bunch of guys, and we'd just plow in there for the night. And
the
watch.
Carlton, was it the Carlton?
The Carlton,
hotel?
That's right. Yeah. It's on Carlton Street.
Yeah, it's on Carlton Street, yeah.
Okay, so my grandfather was Canadian, and during the Vietnam War, I was in high school, And, you know, myself and my buddies, you know, we were not going to go and kill Vietnamese. What did they ever do to us? And so that was kind of our thinking. Mm-hmm. And so we did these dry runs because we thought, oh, we're going to get drafted. We're going to have to go to Vietnam. Okay, we're going to have to go to Canada. That's our plan. So we do these dry runs across the Blue Water Bridge between Port Huron, Michigan, and Sarnia, Ontario, just to see what kind of questions will the Canadians ask us if we decide to flee or you know, how what's the Canadian strip search like? Which I just said, it's going to be cold, whatever it is.
It's
they have permanently cold hands, and they're going to apologize the whole time that they are doing right. What they do. But so anyway, so one time we had this idea, what if our escape is a boat, and we take a boat across the St. Clair River from Michigan over to Ontario? So one of our guys here had a boat, his dad had a boat, loaded up the boat on the trailer, and we drove over to the river, and you can see Canada. It's just a quarter mile, half mile across the river. And we go to get the boat off the trailer. There's no motor on the boat. The dude forgot to bring the motor. Now what are we going to do? I said, man, I see you've got oars in here. It's just a grody fishing boat. We'll paddle across it. We paddle across the Canada.
No way.
To see if the Canadians would catch us, which of course we
looking
knew.
For a soft spot.
Well, all of Canada's a soft spot. The whole
soft border.
I'm just saying, you know.
You described Jason on this podcast a little bit. He always shows up with no motor, and we're constantly paddling.
That is really. Let me tell you, Jason Bateman. Let me just say, Jason Bateman. And I think it was you, Jay, but maybe it was you, Will. But somewhere around 2004, right after Bowling for Columbine and Fahrenheit 9/11, I get a call from your producer asking me to be on Arrested Development.
Oh, wow.
Like, as a character, but as myself.
Right.
But they've written me into... Do you guys remember this?
I feel like I remember this story.
I feel like I remember this. Yeah, Mitch Hurwitz. Mitch Hurwitz wanted you on.
Was that who... Is that?
He's the brain.
He's the creator of the show.
Yeah. Oh, he's the guy. Yeah. Why do I think it's Jim Burrows?
Jim Vallely was his lieutenant.
So anyways, so they asked me to come, and I couldn't do it because I love the show so much. It's so smart. And I thought, I'm going to fail so bad. So I said, I just can't do it. And my agent there, Ari, you know, Ari.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you got to do this. Yeah. And I said, no, it's the smartest show on TV. I know. And it's the smartest one with humans. You're so right. The Simpsons would be the the other one. And so
I wish you'd done it.
I didn't do it. And then so what Mitch did, he hired an actor to play me.
Right.
And I remember this.
Do you remember this now?
I think so.
They tried to find somebody that looked like me, but that's impossible. So then I regretted it. I regretted it, and I thought, yeah, you were just chicken shit about this, and you should have done it. So when you guys came back, when it came back here in the mid teens,
Netflix,
I wanted to call one of you and just say, yeah, I'll do it now.
How about now?
I'll do it now.
You know what? When we do it again,
yeah.
And you will.
Here it comes. We're making news right now, right?
Spoiler alert.
We're going to do the movie.
Is that true? No. Come on. Really?
Hey, Michael, you mentioned, of course, one of the first times I ever became aware of you in 2004 was the amazing documentary Bowling for Columbine. Mm. Isn't it amazing to think back on that now? And I'm sure you get asked this a lot. Bowling for Columbine, it was just an amazing movie and enlightened us all to, you know, what happens when guns get in the wrong hands. Right. And here we are. I don't know how, I can't do the math because I'm too stupid. All these years later, and now it's a daily occurrence that there is a mass shooting. A daily occurrence. And we're just so numb to it.
And they define mass shooting as four or more people killed. And
it should be more than one. Mass shooting should be more than one.
Should be, yeah. But you know, when Americans were like, it's like, you know, this Canadian football. You know, it's not, you have only three downs. We have four. Right. We have to have more than you.
You have to have more.
6 points, not 1 point.
That's a good point.
The rest of the world plays football. They get 1 point when they score a goal. We get six just because we are America. Right.
America's, what was it, like 90% or something is for some kind of gun control, and we still haven't accomplished
90%
that.
90% is correct.
What is the deal? I don't understand it. What is it going to take?
Well, first of all, the NRA is not the force that they used to be. They are not the big, scary lobby that Democrats would never want to cross them. That's, those days are gone for them. And I think some of these shootings, like in Sandy Hook in Connecticut, where 20 first graders essentially had their heads blown off or their faces blown off. It's unbelievable. And there's so much about things like this. I mean, I've actually thought for some time, and I've actually filmed a little bit of an idea I have, where, because I remember this from the Vietnam War, and again, thank you, Canada, because we watched the CBC in Detroit and Flint, and the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting, the nightly news, which was on, I think, like at 9 o'clock at night, prime time, told the truth about Vietnam, told us Americans across the river what was really going on with this war. And I, you know, remember thinking and talking to my Canadian cousins, why don't you kill the same number of Canadians, each of you, that we do in the United States? Because you're no better than us. You've got the same 23 chromosomes in your cells that we do. You watch the same violent movies and violent TV shows. Mm-hmm. Everything, all the reasons they give for why we do it and the Canadians and others don't do it. And I was going to, I was actually going to make this point in the movie, because I did go to Canada, and it's in Bowling for Columbine. We went to, what's it called, Statistics Canada in Ottawa, which for Americans, I have to say, that's the capital. And it turns out, per capita, there are more guns in Canadian homes than in American homes, because hunting is the number one sport in Canada, more so than hockey.
So why don't they, Canadians, they got all these guns, why don't they shoot each other?
Right.
Well, you made a great point, which is one couple of things. One thing is, in the movie, when you go to Canada and you go to people's houses and their doors aren't locked.
Yeah, I remember that.
I just go up to random doors and open them.
And walk
at night.
People's houses at night and walk in, and people would go, oh, how's it going?
How are you doing?
Like, and you go, sorry, I just walked in. Like, no, that's okay. Come on in, eh?
Are you hungry? Kidding.
Yeah, what's going on, eh?
We put that scene, shooting that scene off, we put that off for 2 years to the very last thing to shoot, just in case a Canadian would, because you can't do that in the United States. You just can't walk into somebody's house.
Just in case they shoot you.
Just in case they shoot me. At least we'd have most of the movie.
Yeah, it was that smart. God, it's good producing, by the way. Yeah, really good producing.
Just, I'm always thinking of the film first.
But I want to say, so again, and I know as a Canadian, and I've talked to other Canadians about it, it's a great moment of pride when we watch that scene, because it shows a lot. I think Canadians take a lot of pride in that notion that, like, yeah, we're not, our first instinct isn't to kill. And so it goes kind of back to a couple of things. Sean, what you said, you know, you said that movie is great because it's about, you know, what happens when guns get in the wrong hands. I don't think that that's right. I think that it's a, and I love this country, and I've lived in this country for many years now, and I really love it. And there are a lot of great things about it, but it's about a shift in the culture. There needs to be a shift in the culture and the attitude and the approach and how we look at our fellow, at our neighbors, and look at them as all of us. We're only as strong as our weakest link. And that notion doesn't exist in this country. Like you said, there are more guns per capita. Why aren't there more deaths? Because it's not the, there is a cultural difference. And I think that what needs to happen in the next generation, and hopefully it will, there needs to be a cultural shift. And it's not, and by the way, we're not a political show. You've listened to it. We don't talk in this way. We don't. It's not political.
No,
right.
To say that somebody has earned the right as a human being to be treated with health care, have access to health care. That's just fucking
humanity. But Will or Michael or Jason, what do you think about this argument, though, that it's all based in mental health issues? That's the problem, not the gun.
It can't. Statistically, it can't stack up that way.
It doesn't. We need mental health care in this country, and it needs to be free. Most other advanced countries. Mm-hmm. What you said, Will, is correct. We have to change the cultural thing here. It's not a political thing. You're absolutely right. We have to change. I mean, I started going hunting when I was 11 years old, and at that time, 11 and 12 year olds, we just go out to the woods. The parents, what do you know? We just take the guns and go shoot pheasants.
See you at dinner.
If we make it. Right. But of course, it was a Catholic neighborhood, so everybody had like 11 kids. So, my feeling was that growing up, all these families with 11 kids, they're just playing the odds here. You know, one or two are going to get shot out in the woods. We play baseball out in the street, et cetera. So, but my point is that the culture I won the NRA Marksman Award when I was in Boy Scouts.
Oh.
And you joined the NRA to infiltrate it, right?
Yes.
And
I was going to run against Charlton Heston. That was my thought.
Yeah,
so I'm a lifetime awesome. Member of the NRA.
I love that.
Until I was excommunicated. But you know, let me just tell you guys, Sean and Jason, about, you know, where Will grew up. They keep making their gun laws stronger and stronger. It's really hard to get a handgun in Canada, right? Uh-huh. And in fact, they've sometime recently they've added a new piece of the law, which is if you want a handgun, you have to get your wife, your girlfriend, your ex-wife, your ex-girlfriend. They have to sign a form.
Wow.
That says you are mentally okay and not a domestic abuser.
So you need sponsors.
Yes, but the women decide if the men get the gun.
That's awesome.
And so I started thinking, what's that look like if you're in a living room in Sudbury, Ontario, and the guy wants to get a gun and he's got the government form and he's had to call together the wife, the ex-wife, the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend, the mistress.
Yeah.
Any women in his life have to sign this.
That's
and he's
really
got the
funny.
Paper and he's like, okay, now listen, I can't get a gun. Unless all of you sign this, say it's okay for me to have a gun. And they're all like, really fuck funny. You. We're not right. signing this. And he's like, he gets really mad, right? He's like, I'm going to tell you something. If you don't sign this, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, right.
As soon as I get a gun.
Yeah.
And we will be right back.
We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work. So you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8+ acres. I got to keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8+ acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
And now back to the show.
So, Michael, is the I would imagine that most of the hunters, et cetera, are and in fact the polls bear this out, that they're in favor of basic sort of gun control, gun review,
they are.
Whatever.
Absolutely.
Whatever it's called.
Yes.
So the
majority of Republicans are in favor,
right? And the thing that
some
is
of these
stopping and the thing that is stopping us from having just sort of these basic sort of regulations over that, again, for lack of the appropriate term, is because of the gun lobby. And my question to you is the reason the gun lobby is so strong, so big, so important, is it because the actual industry of gun making and gun selling is so lucrative that they want to protect? Their, like, is there really that much money made selling guns in this country?
In fact, and sadly, just down the road from the Sandy Hook Elementary School is the national headquarters of the Gun Manufacturers Association of America, literally in the same town there in Connecticut. Wow. And no, they yes, of course it's about the money, but it's also something else that Will sort of alluded to. We Americans, we are a frightened people.
Yeah.
Way too much of the time. We live with fear, and our fears are manipulated, especially we've seen it now where
and what Facebook race, tapped into. They're monetizing.
Oh, yeah. Those papers showed that they will make more money the more afraid people are. And that fear goes from everything from a teenager feeling that she's too fat to a teenage boy, I've got too many pimples, to whatever. And people won't like me, and they start to you start living your life with this fear.
And scary movies make a lot of money too. I mean, you know, not to trivialize it, but people, it is a very big emotion in this country.
But it would be much better actually if people just got those emotions dealt with cathartically by watching horror
eating
movies,
eating popcorn, exactly,
and eating popcorn. Yeah. But unfortunately, I think that race has played a significant role in why. A lot of people think they need a gun in the home. And the worst thing you can have is a gun in the home because the statistics show you have a much greater chance of someone in your home committing suicide with a gun than any other way. All the other ways of trying to kill yourself, overdose.
There's a great bit that Jim Jeffries is a stand-up comic, and he's Australian, and he does this bit. I'm not going to do it justice at all, but he was imitating an American, because they have great gun control laws in Australia as well. And he's like, when Americans buy guns and keep them in a safe in their home. Mm-hmm. And he was imitating a guy breaking in and saying, just wait 1 second while I go grab my gun. And he imitates doing the combination, two to the right, one to the left. Hang on 1 sec, I'll be right there. And then, I don't understand it.
Michael,
yeah.
Did you start all of this effort with such an undying passion for giving a voice to the unheard or putting a spotlight on the unseen, or was that something that just developed because you started actually as a filmmaker and you discovered that the subjects you were making films about triggered all of this passion about, like, which was the chicken or the egg? Mm.
If you put it that way, the film would be first because I've always believed, even though I always cared about these things, and when I was 14, I asked my parents if I could leave home. I was inspired by Cesar Chavez, the Berrigan brothers, these, you know, kind of liberal Catholics, and I wanted to go to the seminary to be a priest. And I had to talk them into this. And if you tell a Catholic parent you have a calling, like somebody has spoken to you, they can't get in the way of that. So I got to leave home in ninth grade to go to a seminary. And to study to be a priest, and I because I cared about all these social issues. And but they kicked me out after a year, and I went down and I said to the top, the head priest, I said, "Why are you kicking me out? I've obeyed the rules." And he, Father DeWicke was his name. He goes, "Because you ask too many questions." Wow. And yeah. He said, "We are an institution of answers, not questions." Mm. Uh-huh. And
by the way, I mean, that's like, it sounds like anybody who's worried about holes being poked right. in their story. Yeah. You know what yes. I mean? It's right. like.
It also sounds like he's a member of the Lollipop Guild.
Oh, wow. But so anyways, but I love the movies. And I always, from a teenager on, as soon as I got a driver's license, I was driving to Ann Arbor in Detroit to see all the Kurosawa, Godard, Francois yeah. Truffaut, everything. I went to see everything. And in 1983, I drove down there and I saw a documentary. Didn't know much about it. It was supposed to be about, you know, atomic weapons or nuclear power. And the whole film was, maybe you've seen this film. It's called Atomic Cafe. It's all clips of all the scare stuff during the 50s, you know, and it was funny, but it was about the end of the world.
Right.
And I thought, wow, you could make a documentary and be funny. Yeah. This is like, who's done this? And because I didn't like documentaries, but I always went to a lot of movies and if they let me talk to a film class now, I always say to them the number one rule of not Fight Club, but of documentaries is don't make a documentary.
Right.
Make a movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I hate this word documentarian. We don't call Scorsese a fictionitarian.
Yeah.
Kubrick's not a fictionitarian. We all make movies, and you can make it with fiction or you can make it with nonfiction mm-hmm. or yeah. animation.
And those filmmakers will usually be drawn to existing scripts that speak to something that they're previously passionate about, or they will develop something that they're previously passionate about. Do you find yourself waiting until a certain policy or subject or issue finds its way to you, or are you constantly on the search for things that might benefit from you putting your light on it?
That's a great question. And the way I deal with that is the next film, I ask myself the question, what am I afraid to make? Mm. What's the movie I should not make? I'm afraid to make it. It's just going to be more trouble.
Sure.
And so,
is there something you can tell us now that fits that description that you're working on now?
Well, if you promise not to tell anybody else.
No, it's just us.
Yeah, it's just us. Yeah.
Right? Just us, right?
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. Okay. Just a whisper. I'm right here.
Right, listen to me. I'm trying to stretch for time here. Because my brain is saying, do not tell these.
We can always cut it.
Call us later and say cut it.
It's something about soccer, isn't it? Something about soccer or table
something
tennis.
Something about ping pong.
It should be about soccer. I could make a really funny film about that.
We don't want to put you on the spot. You think about it, and you come back to us.
Michael, okay. Do you think it's finally time for an independent to win in 2024?
I think it's best if actually both people who run either as a Republican or a Democrat should be independent. That it doesn't work anymore. Like we've got 330 million people. Two political parties cannot represent the broad spectrum
it's
of
absurd.
Political thought for 330 million. I wish we had more of a parliamentary system where they could form the coalitions,
yes.
more people would be represented in Congress. And people would vote. I think that 100 million that don't vote, they don't see themselves represented.
Well, you know what's amazing, Michael, is how many times in the last year I'm also a proponent of that, and I've had to explain to people how the parliamentary system works. First of all, it's shocking how many people in this country don't know how that works, and they don't even know the concept of it. And when they hear it, they go, "Well, that sounds pretty good."
Yeah, I don't know how it works.
We
can talk about it offline.
Look it up. I'll tell you tonight. I'm going to tell you tonight at dinner. Okay. But I love this idea, Michael. I love the way you say you approach it. Like you just want to, what am I afraid to make? That is such a powerful, like Sean, I know that you, like you think, what am I, I know Sean's afraid to make a left onto Larchmont from third. Right. So he'll go around, he'll take a right, and then he goes a right
four
and a right.
Right
and
turns,
then he goes, yeah, yeah, right, before yeah, he goes, yeah. so he makes four yeah. right
It's a metaphor of how I live my life.
But it is a great way to, if all of us could kind of look at, like, what is the thing that I'm afraid to do?
Yeah.
What's the thing that makes me uncomfortable? Maybe part of the problem is we've all become too comfortable in this country. I say as I lean back in my office chair.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Spider-Man office chair.
It is a Spider-Man. It's my son's mm-hmm. gaming chair.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with that. And I think, too, that if we could learn to be just kinder to each other, especially the ones that we disagree with.
100%.
Yeah, I think that would be a much better thing.
Why is it, Michael? Why do you think in this country there is this notion that people don't care? I don't know if I told this on the show before, but I once said to my dad, how come you, years ago, he was a lawyer, and then he went into business with one of his clients and et cetera, et cetera. And I said, why did you never move to the States? You could have made way more money. And he said, because I had an obligation to give back to the system that got me here.
Wow.
Well, that
and
is...
And he meant it. And he by the way...
That is a Canadian cultural thinking.
Yeah, point, and he's not a hero. I mean, I love him, and he's my dad, and he's a really good, decent, and just person. But he... That idea... When I heard that, and I was like 18 when he said that, and he meant it. And it's why does that not exist here?
Isn't there a fundamental difference in how the citizenry considers government and what its role could and should be for the citizens? In Canada, it's much more of something to help you and your life. In America, it's more of sort of, I don't know, it's not that, or at least to one side.
Well, this country was born out of a revolution, so think about it that way. There was always a distrust. Sure. But
and the Canadians didn't do it. They didn't revolt against the British.
No,
they
of course not.
They waited them out about another probably 70, 80 years after our revolution because the Canadians knew the British would just get cold and want to go home. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah,
by 1860,
true.
There was a thing called Canada.
It's true. My family lived in New Jersey back then, and during the revolution went to Canada because they were loyalists to the crown. But apart from the relationship to government, what is it about the American cultural, what is it about that mentality that holds this country back from that kind of notion of being in this together or thinking of, or being kinder? What is that lapse? Why does that exist? Do you know? I'm asking for real.
Well, it's part of part of the answer is in the last bit, which is that we were founded in violence and you weren't. And the Canadians weren't. And so you organized yourselves differently. And so to this day, when you have a plane load of refugees landing in Toronto, your prime minister is there to greet and shake the hand of every refugee coming from Syria or wherever. And I wish we were that. You know, my Canadian grandfather, who was the Republican leader in my town in the U.S., I remember him, and he would say that I'm a conservative, but a conservative means that you should conserve your money. Don't spend money you don't have. You should conserve the earth that God gave us. Mm-hmm. That has to be part of what conservative mm-hmm. means.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to sit at the table and have dinner together as a family. I mean, just those basic mm-hmm. conservative what he called conservative values.
Mm-hmm.
And who would disagree with what I just said, regardless whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or whatever?
Yeah.
If we could somehow, and again, it's sad because we are a nation that was born in genocide and built on the backs of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that Canada's a perfect place and doesn't have their shameful history with Native people.
Yep.
But we somehow never wanted to really apologize or get over it or fix it in some way to where the bottom rung of the American ladder is still occupied by Native Americans and Black Americans. And that hasn't changed. And until that changes, all this thing about critical race theory they're talking about, it's like, we want our children, our grandchildren to be taught the truth mm-hmm. about how we were formed, how we've behaved, so that we don't behave that way anymore, so we can be better.
You have to question people who don't want to have those conversations why they don't.
Right.
I think because, to be honest, a lot of people, a lot of white people are afraid that if we give up too much to our history, our truth of our history, we're going to have to give up some of what we have. And they know the demographics too. They know that white people will not be the majority race in the 2040s. That's just 20 years away. So they're scared. They're scared, and they think, just like the white people in South Africa were afraid of, if we let Nelson Mandela out of prison, and if black people in South Africa have rights and they can vote, it's going to be off with our heads. And that did not happen, did it? And it's never really happened, because most people who are victims of any kind of this sort of thing, they don't want to respond that way. They actually want to create the world that they wish they could have lived in all these years.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
And now, back to the show.
Michael, would you say the glass half full version of looking at our future, perhaps immediate future, is that the fear that we've been talking about, which is sort of prompting all of these bad behaviors, do you think the fear might dissipate once those folks start to feel the benefits of this administration / policies, legislation, all that stuff? Will the fear start to subside a bit, and some of that love and kindness that you were talking about as the medicine will more freely flow from those people, that perhaps that's the path towards a lack of sort of maybe getting rid of this tribalism and all being comfortable enough to treat us as all one, as we're all in this together?
I think that's already in the process of happening. I think, well,
that's nice.
I was out there campaigning almost 2 years ago for Bernie on the mm-hmm. road with him. Been a friend of his since his first election in Vermont in 1990. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how happy I am that Biden is president.
Yeah, amen.
I have been stunned so many times, and there's not a lot of coverage of a lot of the little things he's done.
Yep.
In a month or two ago, he got rid of all student debt for any disabled American.
Well, you're a professional messenger. Can you not help them with figuring out a way to get the word out that it's working, that what he's doing? Like, the accomplishments so far are insanely good.
But the problem is with somebody like Michael is he's spoken the truth so many times that what they've done is that they've muddied the waters enough so that when he does say, hey, look, they eliminated debt for all disabled people, they go, oh, just another Michael Moore. He's looking to cause trouble. And it's like, no. He's right. Am I right about that?
Only with 20% of the population. Right. The people that are on the far right, the people that don't believe the coronavirus is real or the vaccine is, you know, I don't know if we can help that sure. far 20%. But I have a lot of success, and I have a lot of fans and people that go to my movies and read my books and listen to my podcast.
And Substack. Tell us about Substack.
I have a Sunday letter that I send out for free to anybody who wants it. And I talk about these things, and I talk about them in a way where I think that I'm not trying to poke people in the eye with it. I'm just trying to say, hey, if you have a disabled member in your family, aren't you happy that this president, a president that I didn't vote for in the primary, aren't you happy that that individual in your family, their student debt has been retired? Isn't that a great thing? It's a little thing, but he's done so many of these little things that I am so... Now when you look at the polls, you see that's why there is not a single thing in his infrastructure, the human infrastructure bill, that the majority of Americans disagree with. It's 60, 70, 80% in agreement.
Michael, how did they do... What was the great trick that they played? Sorry to belabor this, but took people... You know, let's say you go to Michigan. Some person who lives in Michigan... who works, who's been a union member for a long time. It seems like a lot of these sort of working class people who have been part of unions, who have benefited from certain social benefits, have been radicalized by the right. That seems to be like a growing contingent of people who would benefit a lot from a lot of these things, like you're saying. Like they might have a family member who would benefit from what Biden's doing, and they benefit from all these social...
I'll tell you why. Because the Democrats have taken way too long to make these things happen. If they had made more of it happen sooner, that we wouldn't probably even be in the situation. Mm-hmm. You're right. They are horrible at their messaging. Mm-hmm. And I would volunteer the next 2 years of my life to help them with that if they wanted that help. But, you know, I tried to, you know, a couple years ago, my last movie, I tried to convince Steve Bannon to be in the movie because I wanted mm-hmm. him and I to have a sit down talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he told me during this, I didn't, he ended up not being in the film, but he said, you know, I was at your very first screening of your very first film in 1989, Roger and Me, in Telluride Film Festival.
Yeah.
And I sat just down the row from Roger Ebert, and I could not believe this film. And I walked out on the street looking for a payphone. There were no cell phones back then. I called one of our, you know, right-wing operatives in D.C. saying, oh, my God, the revolution will not be led by us. I've just seen this film, and this guy that we've never heard of,
he's a problem.
He's a problem because our people are going to listen to him because he's coming from where they're at.
Yeah.
And he said to me then, this is just 2 years ago, he said, and my greatest thank you to the Democrats is that for these past 30 years, they chose not to listen to you, the Democratic leadership, the people that run the party. Yep. They've kept you as far away as they can because you are the real threat to them.
Yeah.
Not to us as much, but to them. I was like, I was just like listening to this and my head was just spinning. And I'm like, you know, and I know this already because you won't see me speaking at the Democratic convention.
No.
You won't.
And why is that? What was his point? Why are you a threat to the mainstream base of the Democratic Party? Is that what he's talking about?
Yeah. Yes.
What would be a threat?
Because you're seen as the extreme left, right? in their eyes.
Yes, but there's not any longer. The majority of Americans believe women should be paid the same as men.
Yeah.
What I believed 30 or 40 years ago, the majority of Americans, I'm in the middle now, the majority of Americans believe the climate is real.
Right.
I don't have to convince people of these things anymore, or that minimum wage should not be $7.25 an hour. The American public has come to my—
Now we just need to get them to vote, right?
Yes, that's my point. The 100 million, how do we get them to vote?
Yeah.
My proposal is to the Democrats, get ballot proposals on the ballot that will bring out people who otherwise wouldn't vote. There should be marijuana legalization on every ballot in the country. Mm-hmm. There should, in Michigan, in the last election, we passed a ballot proposal making it a crime to gerrymander or to voter suppress.
Oh, I thought you said crime to have seeds in your weed. Because that would
That'll get them out. No seeds,
that
no stems.
That should be in there, too. Because, fuck that. Mm-hmm. Stems and stuff. And you're like, dude, are you fucking... And now he's already left.
Just sift it out.
Yeah.
The marijuana crime I'm mostly concerned about is that when I was a teenager, it smelled so sweet.
Yeah. Mm.
And now it smells like a skunk.
Yeah.
What the hell happened here? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I'm just saying that if we get ballot proposals that will bring people out,
That's smart.
We don't have an equal rights amendment still in this country. If you had an equal rights amendment for your state on your state ballot saying women are to be treated equally, again, you're now appealing to the base of the Democratic Party. Women, young people, people of color.
Who decides what's on the ballot? Would it be the governor of each state?
No. You just go and get the signatures.
Yeah, you get the different number.
How many signatures?
Depends on the state. Sometimes it's 50,000.
Oh, really?
Sometimes, but you could, if you said, hey, I have an idea for a thing, you could write it up today and you could go out, and if you get 250,000, whatever. That's how do you think they did the recall, they tried to do the recall in Gavin Newsom? It was all based
on that.
So it doesn't matter what it is. If I want to make milk green from now on in California,
if I get
100,000 votes, it
the
can
majority
be on the ballot.
Of
Here he goes on the milk green. Dude, we're not doing
it. I just think it'd be so much better.
But let me just say that I wanted to say this at the beginning. And the three of you who I've only met you, Sean, I believe, before. Will was in Flint, the only movie ever set in Flint, a fiction film called Semi-Pro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's right.
The Flint Tropics are the basketball team in it. And and then my chickening out on being on Arrested Development. But I just want to say that... the more of the three of you in this country, the better. Because we need, well, first of all, we all need a good laugh right now. We're not out of the woods yet. But your ability to use satire and to your comedy is so smart. I can't get enough of it. And, I hope someday we can work together in some way, because it's an honor to be on this podcast,
fellow. Oh, it's an honor for you to be on this show.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Michael, I remember what Roger and Me was such a milestone in filmmaking. It really was. I remember just being, I couldn't believe it when I saw it, Fahrenheit 9/11, just incredible. I remember the night I watched it. I remember going for dinner afterwards with my ex and a good friend of ours and talking about it. We were so moved. Bowling for Columbine, all these things. You're such a brave, brave soul. You really are. And I love the idea. And again, it goes with, I need to say it again. If you're listening to this podcast and you think that these are just a bunch of, that we're being political, it's not political to talk about human rights. Mm-hmm. It's just not. And we're just talking about, what I love is you come up, your approach of it is, hey, call me, paint me with that, whatever fucking brush you want to paint me with, but let's just get this shit done.
Let's get it done. Come on, we're better than this.
Yeah, we're better than this.
Come on, everybody.
Yeah. And I would just like to say thank you for basically saving a lot of us a lot of work. Whether you agree with you or not agree with you, you are providing, as I said in the intro, all of us with a lot of information that we wouldn't otherwise either have the time to research ourselves or be interested in even knowing before we hear it, but you are presenting it to us in an incredibly well-done way, whether even when you're on talk shows, on news shows. I mean, I love listening to you talk, so please, please keep it going, keep it coming, and know that it is fully appreciated as well as entertaining. So
ditto here, everything Jason just said. It's just thank you for everything you've done. Thank you. And keep, please don't stop doing it.
Yeah. I will not stop, and you don't stop either. Know the importance of humor in our time.
Will.
It's critical.
Yep.
And
we tell them. We try to tell them every time.
Listen, anybody that's been in it was in the Lego Movie, one of the great films of all time. The most pointed and fulfilling examination of us as a society in the Lego Movie. I'm serious. Yeah. You guys know I'm telling that. Let's
I agree.
Give it up.
I agree.
Those guys are sneaky smart.
Yeah, no.
Michael,
you know, and you know, I don't need to go through the whole damn list, but you know, Ozark. Enough said.
Don't even put it on the list. Don't even put it on. If you don't want
to
go through the list,
if
you don't want to go through the list, just leave it off the list.
And you know, we the public don't want you to stop doing any of this. We want you to do this work, even long after you've I've done this for 5 years. I'm out. But the importance of this. And of people being able to have that laugh and to have that. I think, you know, if you haven't seen the film Sullivan's Travels from the 30s, early 40s, about a Hollywood director wanted to make the socially conscious film and get people to think about things. And at the end of the film, he learns the best thing I can do is just to make a great movie and give people a chance to laugh. They've worked hard all week. Mm-hmm. Life is one curveball after another being thrown at our heads. If what you give people are two solid hours of a great movie and one that where they can laugh and one that treats them as if they're smart, not stupid. Yeah. That's what all of you do that. I remember my parents in their 80s were like, Seinfeld was their favorite show. Yeah. And I'm like, do you guys get any of this Upper West Side humor? And no, we just think it's funny. And I thought, wow, that was the genius of Seinfeld, that he could take a cultural thing, living on the Upper West Side, and people in Flint, Michigan loved it. And that's the key. It's what to the people who want to make a documentary, make a movie, not a documentary. Mm-hmm. Make something that people are going to be just, it's going to move them. They're going to have a great laugh. They're going to learn something. They're going to get angry, whatever it is. Don't go for the mediocre. There's a great Kurt Vonnegut line in his only play that he wrote, Happy Birthday, Wanda June. And he says, one of the characters says, you know, in America, they love the mediocre. And boy, I just hated hearing that at the time.
That's why we're here.
I thought, yes. And so we all of us, must not do mediocre work. And we must give people a chance while they're coming up out of their seats, feeling like, yes.
Dude, Michael, that is so inspiring. I it's almost like I wanted, Jason, can you make a pledge today that you won't make any more mediocre work?
Yeah.
Do you think you can actually make that pledge today? Yeah. No, I'm asking him.
No, we should have a petition. We should just have something to sign.
I'm dancing as fast as I can.
When I open my movie theater, I restored an old movie theater where I live in northern Michigan. And one of the first movies we played was Juno. That is an example of a genius film, and your role in that was beautiful.
It's great.
He's a lonely guy. Yeah.
It's great. He was. You were fantastic.
He were great. I forgot about that. You were great.
I never forget.
He's always great. These guys, I'm lucky to be with these guys.
And the heart that he had with this teenager who was pregnant and trying to be a good adult for her was very moving. But of course, the film is also funny and genius and everything else. This is the first thing that popped in my head, though. But Jason, your long list of this is much appreciated by those of us who do need that respite, that
chance. Well, you're describing beautifully the stuff that you do, making the medicine go down easy by creating some real legitimate entertainment around some education. So please keep that going. And your stuff is funny as hell as well. I mean,
no kidding.
You know, getting the audience to a happy place is always the greatest first step towards change. So I think what you're saying there about, you know, channeling the comedy and, you know, Adam McKay is doing a great job with that too, with all the stuff that he's making.
Yeah.
And so thank you. Note taken and right back at you. And
so
please,
jarringly
please
funny how, Roger and Me were so jarringly funny at the time. I didn't know anything about you before Roger and Me. It was so jarringly funny, and Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for hanging out with us on a Saturday.
Yeah,
buddy.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's been great and an honor, and we all have a lot to do. And for the people listening to this, do not give up. That's exactly what they want you to do.
We're on the upswing.
Do not give up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Unless you think there's no way it's going to happen, then you do give up. I just want to give them the out.
Basically get your boat in the river up there and start moving your oars towards Canada.
If you actually believe that there's no way it's going to get better, get in that boat and go to Canada.
Yeah. With no engine.
Thank you, Michael, very, very much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much. Be well.
Bye, pal.
You too, pal.
See you later. That man,
that was super, super exciting to see his face pop up there.
Yeah.
It was. He's a great filmmaker and a great voice. And I do love, again, I love what a voice he is, to try to be a voice of reason in the way that he tries to break issues down that are complicated, that are hot button issues. Yeah. Gun control, for whatever reason, is a hot button issue. By the way, it should be fairly cut and dry. And for whatever reason, it's like...
Yeah, it's like for me, I consider it as issues for dummies.
Well, just singular, not even plural, just issue for dummy.
Dummy.
Sorry,
he's presenting it, he's wrapping it in a very relatable.
Yes, I love it.
Surround. Yeah, he's just
he knows what he's doing.
But the rap has a sexy indifference too. So it's like a sexy indifferent like rap.
Yeah. I'm like telling you stuff, but I'm not telling you stuff.
Yeah, like kind of a coy.
Yeah.
It is a nice, again, whether you agree or not with his stuff, I think it's undeniable that what he's doing is somewhat philanthropic, because I'm sure he's not getting super rich off of all this stuff.
But you know what's great about that is he doesn't pick a side, and we've used this before, but he doesn't pick a side. He's pretty much bipartisan! Bipartisan! What do you think?
Here's what's astounding about your bike. We've used bipartisan before, by the way. So
that's what I said. I said we used it before.
Pretty lame dismount. Pretty lame dismount.
We'll make it up to you on the next podcast episode, listener.
Oh, well, thank God you just saved it. You just saved it, you fucking dick.
Please stand by.
Yeah, Rob with one. Please stand by.
Please stand... Bye.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Bennett Barbaco, Michael Grant Terry, and Rob Armjarf.
Smart. Less.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million-dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.